Hey everyone, this is Brad Hughes, school principal and chief encouragement officer from Ontario, Canada. And I've got some good news for you. You found the Good News, Brad News podcast, amplifying stories of heart-led educators moving from positive intention to action. Great people like you, improving kids' lives through service, connection, and finding the fun. So glad you're here. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back. So glad you're here for another edition, a 30 wonderful edition of the Good News, Brad News podcast. I am your host, Brad Hughes, inviting you to settle in and get comfortable for episode 31, featuring educator, author, and self-compassion champion, Lisa Bayless. Lisa is an educator, school-based counselor, facilitator, and parent who has been sharing well-being strategies for over 20 years now. Lisa is a certified mindfulness and self-compassion teacher who studied under pioneers Dr. Chris Germer and Dr. Kristen Neff. Lisa is the author of the book, Self-Compassion for Educators, and the creator of the AWE Method, Awakening Well-Being for Educators, which blends self-care, mindfulness, and self-compassion. Lisa identifies self-compassion as the ultimate act of self-care. And over the last few years, Lisa's made a commitment to deepen her own personal practice around mindful self-compassion, and then to teach it to educators specifically. She now facilitates workshops, presentations, and retreats for educators, providing both the theory and practice of self-compassion. Now, Dr. Stuart Schenker affirms that the well-being of children is inseparable from the well-being of the critical adults in their lives. The empathy required of educators and caregivers is tremendously energy intensive. Caring for oneself is critical to restoring the capacity to care for others. When you take care of yourself, you're also taking care of everyone you meet and interact with. We know that emotions and emotional states can be contagious. With this knowledge, self-care becomes a community act. This self-care includes self-compassion. With self-compassion, says Dr. Kristen Neff, we give ourselves the same kindness and care we'd give to a good friend. If compassion is empathy in action, then self-compassion is being intentional about turning that empathy towards ourselves. And the book, Self-Compassion for Educators, is Lisa's call to action that puts educators' well-being at the forefront of healthy school cultures. When an educator's well-being comes first, educators are supported in developing healthy habits for themselves that lead to more energy and more capacity for the heart-led work they do in their households, classrooms, and communities, all the while improving outcomes for more kids. At a time where educators are frequently reminded to look after themselves, I talk with Lisa about shifting the conversation from self-care to community care, and to spaces and systems where educators have time, permission, and support to look after themselves and one another. And this episode also includes a special bonus. Lisa leads us in a self-compassion break that takes just minutes. A pause for reflection and restoration that you can return to again and again. Dr. Chris Germer says, a moment of self-compassion can change your entire day. A string of such moments can change the course of your life. So let this episode be your introduction to a string of just these kinds of moments. Moments that can change your day or change your life. Moments that remind us to be gentle with and forgiving of ourselves amid multiple stresses and challenges. Moments to invest in self-compassion just as we would for all the others we serve. I know you'll enjoy getting to know Lisa today and After hearing her story, you'll be eager to connect with her too. So, here's my interview with self-compassion champion Lisa Bayless today on the Good News, Brad News Podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Good News, Brad News Podcast. I am incredibly excited to connect with an educator, author, and champion for self-compassion, Lisa Bayless. Lisa, welcome to the Good News, Brad News Podcast.
I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And it's so nice to finally get a chance to talk to you, Brad.
Likewise, Lisa. I am really excited to dig into our conversation tonight. But I always like to ask guests first to let our listeners know about you and about your different roles. So could you tell us about your different community, professional, and your personal roles? What makes Lisa Bayless, Lisa Bayless?
I used to always say I wear so many hats, as we do as educators, right? I work part-time as a school-based counselor, so that's my educator role. I was a classroom teacher for almost 16 years, and then I did my master's in counseling, and I've been school-based counseling pretty much since. And so I work at school part-time. I'm a certified mindfulness and self-compassion teacher. It's been my passion over the last few years to dive into my own personal practice around mindfulness and self-compassion and then teach it to educators specifically. So most of my training has and supports have been supporting educators in getting a foundational practice around mindfulness and self-compassion for themselves. I'm a recent new author of a book called Self-Compassion for Educators, which I really love, and I love to put that out in the world. I've been facilitating workshops, presentations, and retreats for educators for many, many years too. Probably my biggest and most important role is that I'm also a mom. I've got a 10 and a 12-year-old, and they probably teach me most of the lessons of my life that I need to learn. So in all the different hats I wear, that's usually the one that stays closest to my head, but they're all really important, and they help shape me, who I am, and how I show up in our world.
Lisa, you identify self-compassion as the ultimate act of self-care. Talk with me about the components and benefits of self-compassion.
You know, I just have to say, I think self-care in itself is the behavioral act of self-compassion. It's the practice of saying, I care about myself enough to care for myself. And I believe that self-compassion is the foundation because it recognizes that this one too is someone to take care of. So I think maybe before we need to understand what compassion means. Compassion is I see suffering, stress, struggle, and I have a desire to alleviate it. We are really great at providing that for our students, for our colleagues, right? We see their stresses, their struggles, and we want to jump in and support and help. Self-compassion is turning that towards ourselves. Like, I noticed that this one is struggling, is having a hard time, is suffering in some way. And I also want to help. I want to care. I want to alleviate the pain and stressors. And most of the work around self-compassion has been researched by Dr. Kristen Neff. And she talks about the three components of self-compassion, which I'll share because I think they're the foundation of how we look at all of this. And those three components are mindfulness, which mindfulness means to be aware of what's going on around us without getting caught up in the judgments and sort of the criticisms about what our thinking and feeling patterns are. And that's truly is, I'm aware that I'm struggling, right? How many times have we come home from work and our shoulders are at our ears and we're like, ah, we're so stressed and we don't even know what's happening. And we go, oh, right, maybe I've had a bad day. So the mindfulness component is there's hard things going on in my life, in my world, and I'm aware of them in my body. I'm aware of my thoughts that go with them. I'm aware of my feelings that are existing. And then the next component that we bring in that is the fact that we can attend to some of that mindfulness with like a kindness, a loving kindness, the way we would maybe meet our dearest friends, our students, our colleagues. We're so great at, you know, if you ask someone, what would you say to a friend who's suffering? Most people have some beautiful, caring words. But when you ask that to turn them back towards themselves, it's harsh. There's criticism, there's judgment. And so if we were able to meet ourselves the way we would meet a friend, talk to ourselves in that loving kindness, kind way, that's the second component. So we know that we're suffering. We're aware that there's some loving kindness that we need to attend to. And then the third piece, which I think is my most favorite, especially in schools, is that, well, that we're all human, right? That it's this term called common humanity, that we all exist and that suffering is an experience of being human, that we are not alone in our struggles and our suffering. and we don't need to negate them, that we're entitled to feeling them. And so when you bring all of them together, it gives you this awareness of this one hurts, like this is hard, and you know, I'm not alone in this. Other people feel just like me. And then we sort of bring in that loving kindness. And usually that comes from the beautiful question, what do I need? And we can wrap all that up. And that's the essence of continuing to come back to self-compassion.
Lisa, you've written that many educators are caregivers, and yet rarely do we include ourselves in the compassion and kindness we deserve. And as you said, the kindness and compassion we desperately need. Why might that be?
When we have this natural tendency to care, we are really great at outwardly showing it. But many of us also haven't been taught to also include ourselves in that circle of compassion. We're really great at giving it out, but we don't recognize that our own personal practice of caring for ourselves is part of the caring for others. And so, you know, it's been really easy as educators to show up. And for many of us, for 30 kids in a classroom, it's really, you know, we're going to continue to give it out to the people around us. But the part of bringing it back actually has to include some awareness, and personal awareness takes energy and is hard. So for many of us, we just don't attend to it, and yet can be probably one of the most beneficial ways to be able to sustain that well-being so that we can show up for those kids that we really do love.
Lisa, a key takeaway from the book for me was the concept of emotional labor. What is emotional labor, and how is it related to fatigue and burnout for educators and other caregivers?
I like to think of that idea. Emotional labor is that the kind of that face you put on in the morning when you know you got to get up and go. I actually think I saw a meme once, and it was, you know, a teacher getting up in the morning and looking at a mirror of all the different feelings and faces. And it's like, which one am I going to put on to be able to face this day? Because so much of what we carry and what's going on in the world is heavy. And yet many of us know that it's not safe to bring that heaviness to our kids. We've got to put on, you know, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. And that takes energy, right? It takes energy to put on face, right? To be somebody when we're not really feeling that way. And that's really exhausting. And that's part of what leads to this feeling of not attending to our feelings, not being aware of what's going on. And can be a part of that beginning of burnout, right? When we're constantly having to show up, but we're not actually attending to what's really going on for ourselves. Yeah. Oh, I can just feel the overwhelm thinking about that. It's really hard.
It can be such a natural part of our practice as educators to suppress our feelings about what's going on around us so that we can better serve. And yet, very often educators receive emails and other messages reminding them, look after yourself, look after yourself. Those reminders about self-care. Lisa, what can we do to challenge systems and to challenge learning communities to shift the emphasis from self-care, that is, look after yourself, to community care? What kind of conditions can we create to make it possible for us all to look after one another?
Yeah, I love that. And don't get me wrong, self-care is important. But the way most of us define self-care is, you know, going for a walk in the evenings, having a bubble bath, getting a massage, and you can't stop in the middle of a frenetic classroom when everybody's all over and be like, whoa, you guys are stressing me out. I'm going to go get a massage right now. You know, I need to practice self-care. And those one-offs in school are lovely, but they're not sustainable. So when we're looking at care long-term, invitation to practice care in your own space is really important. And an emphasis around that is fine. But for many of us, it sometimes feels almost like that's one more thing. And I don't know about you, but I'm also that person, if I'm overwhelmed and someone's like, just breathe. It's like, you know, don't tell me to just breathe right now, right? And so often timing around self-care is sometimes the problem. And the wellness push in schools is not necessarily because it's not important. It's just maybe not getting to the whole purpose of things. Keep practicing care if it's part of your life. If it's not, finding ways to care for yourself. I often think about when we ask ourselves the quintessential self-compassion question, which is, what do I need right now? That's the question we ask ourselves for ourselves at home. What do I need right now? Do I need to cuddle my kids? Do I need to go for a walk? Do I need to watch a movie? What are the things that are going to support me? However, when I'm at school, I can't do those things. So when our community is asking those questions, what do you need? How can we support you? We can't just offer you massages every time things are hard, but maybe we can have compassionate conversations. Maybe we can create community to find supports. if you need a little bit of space to go to the bathroom during the day, because for most educators, even that's hard. Can I pop in and give you 5 minutes? Sometimes it's the little systems that can make a big difference. And so when we're looking beyond self-care, self-care, foundational practice, it's the act of compassion. It's the caring for myself, I'm going to keep doing it. But when we're in a system, it's that, how do I care for myself amongst my system? When I ask my colleague, what do you need right now? How can I help you? I recognize your suffering. And sometimes that comes from practices around appreciation, open conversation, opportunity to create a culture of caring and gratitude. Some of these pieces that can have a foundational practice around shifting a system out of always being reactive into slowing everything down and being a little more responsive. And I think giving space to slow down systems is probably one of the most important things we can do right now.
Lisa, do you think that setting reasonable boundaries for ourselves and then being clear and being real about what we can and cannot handle or what we do or do not have the capacity to do, does that boundary setting fit with your vision for self-compassion?
100% boundary setting is a part of being compassionate. And Kristen Neff, again, because I love her work and her research, she talks about the yin and the yang of compassion, the tender and the fierce side. And most of when we talk about self-compassion, we think of the tender side. It's the coming back home to ourselves. It's being gentle with ourselves. It's, you know, meeting the suffering. But sometimes there's a bit more of a fierce side, a protective side, a boundary setting side that says, this is all I can take right now. And I'm going to set some boundaries. It's recognizing that actually doing more than we're capable is not being compassionate for ourselves. It's doing more because we feel like we have to. Well, that's leading to perfectionist thinking. Again, not being compassionate. A compassionate practice says, what can I handle? What am I, where's my capacity? What can I say no to with, because again, I'm caring for myself. It's not putting up all walls and saying no because I'm burning out. It's saying what's important in my life. It's knowing what your values are. We do a lot of work around values in compassion work, because when we know what's important to us, it's really easy to then say, here's my filters. I'll say yes to this, but I can't do it all. And we can't. And I think in education, there's a bit of a push that teachers can be all things and do all things. And just a gentle reminder that we can do some things well, but we can't do everything at the same time. And so boundaries being probably one of the most important fierce practices that we can set for ourselves. And you can do that without being harsh or critical, right? It can be such a beautiful practice of, this is not within my wheelhouse right now, or I can't take one more thing on. So I do it with students, because most of the counseling practice I do is with students. We talk a lot about how far are we out of our boundaries. A lot of kids take on too much too. I run a program called Compassion Coaching for Leaders. We talk a lot around boundaries and difficult conversations too around that. And so that's in the consultancy part of my work. But I think giving ourselves permission to be tender and fierce at the same time, this is the human part of showing up in a system that's not always human, but is about humans, right?
Lisa, what would you suggest to a listener that wants to create more moments of self-compassion and improve their relationship with themselves? How might they begin?
Yeah, such a beautiful place. And I think start small, learn a little bit, get a place where you can practice. You can go online, find all kinds of practices. Mindfulness and self-compassion are, I love to say, they're not something you can read about. You can, and you can get an understanding of about it, but they are practices that you need to embody, and they're lifelong. You know, we can do a practice and you can't be like, great, I got it. Like, I'm mindful and self-compassion for life now. It's just like you don't stop going to the gym once you started lifting and strengthening your bicep muscles. You do the same thing. So if you're just learning about this and you've heard a little bit about more, I invite you to find a practice. Come to my website. I have a whole bunch of free practices there. Listen to one. Start to ease into it. Some of the best and accessible practices, informal ones to start, simply is using a hand and just placing it on your heart. Which sounds a little bit strange as a beginning of a practice, but you know, we use this all the time to hold people when they're suffering. We will wrap our arms around people who are struggling. We'll hold our babies when they're first born with such compassion. And yet when it's ourselves that are struggling, using the own warmth of our hand in a moment, it's probably the one practice I do more than anything. Anytime I feel something that's challenging, difficult, when I'm listening to someone else or when it's with myself, my hand just simply goes to my heart and I remind myself to act with some warmth and some tenderness. a self-compassion break, which can be a formal or informal practice, which brings in those components, which is really understanding that this is hard, right? This is a mindful moment. I'm aware that I'm struggling, pausing enough to be like, whoa, right? This is really tough. And then giving yourself permission to remember you're not alone. There's a practice that all of you can be. Like, this is part of being human, perfectly imperfect humans, right? And then attending to that in a way that we would treat our friend. And I'm happy to guide you through that practice because it's a really lovely one we can do in a 4 or 5 minute mindful practice. But it's also a beautiful reminder to say, hey, I can do this in a few moments when I'm struggling if I remember these 3 points. And they're a really great just grounding practice into a moment when things are hard.
Lisa, that would be a real gift for our listeners if you would be willing to lead and model that self-compassion break.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I'd be really happy to do that. So those of you listening, you can just settle into a chair if you wish. And if you want to close your eyes, you can close your eyes as an invitation, or you can just keep your eyes open and listen to my words, however they may feel for you. If you're driving, keep your eyes on the road. If you're walking, you know, enjoy the surroundings around you. The one thing I will say ahead of time before we go further in this is I am going to ask you to think about something that you're struggling with. To instill compassion, we have to actually suffer a little, right? There has to be a bit of discomfort. Most of us, that's pretty easy to come up with something pretty quickly. So I'm also going to invite you not to choose 9 out of 10 out of hard things going on in your life, because when we first start practicing self-compassion, the best thing we can do is wade into this shallow end of the pool and not jump in and feel all the things at once, you know? When we practice self-compassion, it's sort of like very gently putting our life jacket on so that we can emerge ourselves into the pool of suffering. And it's easy and important to go slow. So what I'll invite you all to do right now is to consider something that you are struggling with that's a 4 or 5 out of 10 on a stress level. So perhaps it's an exam coming up or a stressful situation or difficult conversation you're having. Perhaps it's an illness that you're struggling with or a global pandemic that we've been facing. Something that, as you think about, creates a little bit of discomfort in your body. So give yourself permission to sink into a bit of that discomfort. Perhaps take a deep breath and feel into your body what you notice about. If many different situations are coming up, just choose one for this exercise. So choosing one thing to work with. And again, if you want to close your eyes, you can, or you can just leave your eyes open. But once you've discovered that situation that's hard and you've sort of felt into your body, I'm going to invite you just to notice and perhaps offer yourself the words, this is hard. This is hard. Or this is a moment of suffering. Or it could be something that's like, ooh, ouch. And all we're doing is just bringing in a bit of mindful awareness to the fact that we're feeling challenged by something. So in a real gentle and caring tone too, tone is so important. So really gently saying to yourself, this is a difficult moment. And then in that same gentle and kind tone, I invite you to offer yourself words like, other people would feel just like I would in this scenario, or I'm not alone, or this is what it's like to be human. So we're just giving ourselves permission to recognize there's this common humanity, this peace around being a perfectly imperfect human being. This might be a nice time to offer that hand to your heart if you haven't tried that before, just noticing the warmth of your hand, seeing how it feels for a moment. Just attending to your own sense of self. And then try offering yourself some kind words. It could sound something like, may I just be kind to myself right now? Or maybe it's a bit more fierce, like, may I know that I can do hard things, or I've got this. Or something simple like, I am enough. And if those words that are coming up, or if you're just not sure what those words might be, perhaps thinking about if your best friend was struggling with the same problem, the exact same scenario, what would you say to them? The words that you would want them to feel deeply in their heart. Words that when they hear it, they go, oh, thank you. That's what I needed to hear. Could you address those same words back to your own heart? And then just checking in and noticing how you feel and try all those statements again. This is a moment of suffering. May I know I'm not alone. May I give myself the kindness I need. And take one more nice deep breath. If your eyes were closed, feel free to lift them. And just recognizing that that simple practice can be one of those things that you can do in mere moments. Whew, this is hard. Okay, I'm not alone. What do I need? What do I meet myself with kindness? So when we bring those three components in, we can use it between classes, when something hard is happening in our classroom, when it's a reminder to say, slow down, just be here for this moment. It's not going to change anything, but it will shift and change how you feel so you can show up to be there for the things that are going on around you.
Lisa, thank you so much. And your tenderness and compassion are truly palpable. But also, I love how you are advocating for self-compassion as something that can combine tenderness with fierceness. Yeah. And you clearly have a fierce determination to share your gifts and share perspectives with others that ultimately benefit the individual. And then by extension, I just think of the ripple effects, Lisa. I think of the ripple effects that this practice can have for individual educators to eventually result in greater and greater outcomes for kids.
Yeah. Thank you. My wish would be that every educator in the world has the capacity to learn a little bit of this so that they can continue to show up, because we know we're in the business for kids and we want to support our kids, but we can't keep supporting our kids if we haven't supported ourselves. You know, co-regulation occurs when our kids are stressed. And if we can't regulate our own well-being and our own overwhelm, then we're not going to be able to continue to do this really meaningful yet very difficult work. And so thank you for helping me spread this message. And if anybody has any questions, I love to talk about it, and I'm happy to keep it going out into the world and into the schools. And there's lots of ways to continue to do this work.
Lisa Bayless, your book is Self-Compassion for Educators. I encourage all our listeners to do a deep dive into this book and do a deep dive into your own personal health and well-being. And please keep in touch with Lisa. Lisa, you are a difference maker, and I really appreciate your time tonight with all of our listeners. Thank you for being with me on the Good News, Bad News podcast.
It was such an honor and a pleasure, and I look forward to another chance to speak with you another time. I hope our paths cross soon.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Good News, Bad News podcast. Please like, subscribe, and leave a comment wherever you found this podcast. And if you like what you heard, please recommend Good News, Brad News to a friend. And please hit me up on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Brad, B-R-A-D, underscore Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S. I look forward to hearing from you and to reconnecting with you on our next episode. Until then, get out there and do amazing things.
Is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at teachbetter.com/podcasts, and we'll see you at the next episode.